Good afternoon. We're happy to be here and see the energy of youth. As we get older, you start to realize that some of that energy is no longer there that we had when we were your age. But so my name's Wilmer Martin, and I live in Marystown, Pennsylvania. Our class for today is Christian Friendship. I had a young man tell me that his father would leave church, and he said on the way home, he would always complain, "Nobody talked to me after church." And he said, I realized that the other Sunday when I left church that I started thinking the same thing. Nobody talked to me after church. And he was feeling sorry for himself. Whose fault was it that nobody talked to him after church? Somebody. His fault. All right. It was his fault. So, by implication, Christian friendship implies there may be another kind of friendship out there. What other kind of friendships are out there? Worldly friendships, all right? Let me ask you this. When you think about a friend, what would you give as a definition? I'm not talking about a Webster definition. Off the cuff. I ask you, a friend, how would you define a friend? Somebody that cares about you? All right, thank you. Something else? Somebody you're close to? Ladies? Loyalty? Thank you. Somebody you can talk to? One at a time here. Somebody you care about. All right. Somebody else said something?
Admonishment.
Somebody you trust. Spend a lot of time with. All right. Now let's remember this, that there's all of us have social needs. We're made that way. All right. How you relate to friends has a lot to do with, I'm going to say, your parents. All right. So if you live out in the boonies somewhere and you didn't have a lot of opportunity interchange with other people, your social skills and your friendship skills are probably going to be a little lacking. And you're going to discover that when you come to a meeting like this today. All right. You come together and here's this big group of other young people all your age, and you start to say, wow. Now, some of you thrive in that. Those that have kind of created this isolated concept of life feel a little bit out of place. All right? So let's understand this. Just because you feel a little out of place does not mean you're strange and you're odd and you're weird. All right? It just simply means that you probably need to expose yourself to some more people and learn the art of friendship. I have a verse I want somebody to turn to for me and read it. Luke chapter, let me get my glasses on here. Luke chapter 6. I volunteered to read Luke chapter 6. Brother Samuel here is going to read that, and I want you to read verses 32 to 35. And we're going to read this, and I want you to think about the difference between a Christian friendship and, we had the thought of worldly friendship, and the other kind of friendship that's out there. Now keep in mind, Christian friendship doesn't simply mean that happens because you go to the same church with somebody. All right? And you're going to see that when he reads these verses to us. You have it? Loud and clear?
"For if you love them which love you, what thank have you? For sinners also love those that love them. And if you do good to them which do good to you, what thank have you? For sinners also do even the same. And if you lend to them of whom you hope to receive, what thank have you? For sinners also lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love ye your enemies, and do good, and lend, hoping for nothing again. Your reward shall be great, and ye shall be the children of the highest. For he is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil."
Thank you. All right. from the ladies. Christian friendship versus a non-Christian friendship consists of what? Loving our enemies? Thank you. He gives like three or four different illustrations of something that was happening in that passage. And I realize you don't have your Bibles open, so it's not always easy to focus. But serving? Thank you. Thank you. Giving without looking to receive. Now, if we're really honest with ourselves, a lot of our friendships, if it's a one-way street, we're ready to just kind of cancel it out. What's in this for me? Forget it. I'm done with it. All right? Now, another question that I ask you. How many of you go to church with your enemies? Anybody? Some of you? Wow, that's a bad situation. Go to church with your enemies. Why is that? Okay. The purpose of church is for what?
Worshiping God and edifying others.
All right. So, friendship is a very important part of church life. And that's why I think learning to develop friendship is important, because sometime this group of young people will be the 40 and 50 year olds that set the pace for church life. All right? And if you have not learned to cultivate friendship and develop friendship, I'm going to tell you that this group of people, I don't know how many churches you represent here, will be 10 times as many different churches because it all split apart. Because we haven't learned how to be friends. We haven't learned how to be the giver and not a taker. And we're going to look at that as we go throughout this subject this week. Friendship is learning how to give in relationships. Otherwise, you know it better than anybody out there in the world. And unfortunately, we have assemblies of believers where that happens. Where people, instead of being givers, they're there to get something out of this for themselves. And they don't realize the best way to get something out of a relationship is to be a giver. And what you receive out of that relationship is the product of your willingness to give. And you'll never receive more than you ever gave, all right? And so you have people going all across the globe looking for that friendship that's going to give them something. Looking for that church relationship that's going to give them something. And they forgot that it's not about the getting, it's about the giving, all right? So to clarify, Christian friendship is what am I putting into this relationship? Do I have anything to contribute? And maybe you feel like, I have nothing to contribute. Well, we're going to look at that a little bit. I want to read you a little account here of a lady. I'll just take the time to read it. I didn't have many friends when I was growing up. There were lots of reasons. I lived in a rural community with out transportation. There were economic differences between our family and those around us. I was poor. My church emphasized separation. My family masked its fear of outsiders by intentionally closing itself off. My bookish nature in a culture that valued action and practicality. Then in parentheses, students with A's were not welcomed in my high school except by a few teachers who weren't welcomed either. Pretty kind of a low class community that she was living in, obviously. But lest I attach all blame for my friendlessness to outside influences, I now know that my own arrogance, now get this, I now know that my own arrogance was insufferable to those few who might have been willing to climb the barriers toward relationships. Now, if we're all honest with ourselves, there's individuals who want to develop a relationship with other people. But because of a preconceived concept about that person, we create a barrier. All right? And we isolate ourselves. We hold back instead of allowing ourselves to participate in their desire to be our friend. That was this lady. I learned independence. Got me back up here. There were advantages to this early being deprived of friendship. I learned to enjoy solitude. And let me say this. If you're that social butterfly that just likes to have something going on all the time, and there's people like that, I want to encourage you to also learn to enjoy being by yourself sometimes. All right? I remember some families, it's like they're gone all the time. They're never home. They're always got something going. And I come to the conclusion that they're not comfortable in their own skin. They're not comfortable being in their own family circle. I guess if they were home as a family unit, they'd probably fight with each other. So therefore, the best way to keep from fighting is to make sure that you keep this big thing happening all the time. Learn some solitude. But don't get unbalanced in that, all right? There's a place. Somebody turn to Psalm 68:6 and get ready to read that for me. There's a place where we have to learn to function as a family, all right? I'm going to continue to read this lady's experience. I learned to enjoy solitude. I learned to find personal projects that bring me satisfaction, all right? That's actually good. If I could never find satisfaction in a personal project, then I'm probably missing something there. But if that's all I experience in life, then I'm missing something on the other side. There has to be a balance in all of this, all right? So let's not get swayed one way or the other. I've never been bored for more than an hour or two in my life. I learned independence, all right? I don't need anybody in my life. Wow. It mystified me in college that other students ran around trying to find someone to go to meals with. All right? Who's going to sit with me at the table here at Bible school today? You know, I've got to have a crowd around my table. If there's not a crowd around my table, I must be missing something. All right? Well, that wasn't this lady. She was okay just eating at a table by herself. I also learned to think and act without being overly concerned about what other people thought of me. Now, most of you here are probably really conscious about what other people think of you. And then there's some of those people that aren't. I remember a young man that was acting up one time, and another young man said, "Why don't you just be decent?" He said, "I tried that, and it wasn't any fun." All right? Well, I guess it wasn't, because he didn't know how to be decent. So, sometimes it's good for us to be concerned about what other people think of us, but not overly concerned, okay? Don't put yourself in the bondage of worrying about what are people going to think of me. Because if you do that, you'll never truly be who God wants you to be, all right? Now, the beautiful thing about this lady's life was that through that whole experience, she learned a few things. Friendless people become selfish people, all right? Very selfish. If I had remained in the fringes of friendship, I think I might have become a rather rigid, self-pleasing person who rarely entered, now get this, the painful grit of someone else's life. Got that? The painful grit of someone else's life. All of us want to have friends. But friendships can get messy. Friendships can be painful. And we're going to look at some of that. Don't live in that idealistic world that friendship is all gravy. People do that. And they just go from one person to the next person to the next person, and they never come back to understanding that friendships sometimes just aren't perfect. God in His kindness did not allow that selfishness to happen in her life. College years brought people able to scramble over the barriers. And she tasted the joy of like-minded people and went out looking for more. One by one, God had broken down my barriers with appropriate friend at just the right spot. All right? So, if somebody comes into your life, Is it just a coincidence? Sometimes it appears that way. But if you actually believe in God here today, that person coming into your life may have been brought into your life because God wants you to learn something about yourself through that person. And some of those people aren't nice people. They're not the kind of person that if you were out looking for a friend, that you would even stop and consider. But remember this, God has a reason for bringing people into your life. And that's what this lady learned. Did I think that committed Christians were blind to intellectual rigors? Well, guess what? God blessed her with somebody in her life that taught her otherwise. Did I think that wealthy people were just all about their money? Well, God brought into her life another lady who came from wealth, and she came to realize that her life wasn't all about money. She could talk about something other than money. All right? Did I think that serious Christians lack creativity? And then she was introduced to somebody else in her life where she learned that creativity, there are Christians that are creative. They can think outside the box. So, as giving people, there's a danger to that. Better to give than to receive. That's what the Bible tells us, all right? Did I think I wanted to give but not receive? God introduced me to grief. All right? When God introduces you to grief, you suddenly realize that grief is something that is shared with others. All right? More or less. Some people need a lot of people around them when they're grieving, and others need less. But sooner or later, you realize that life by yourself during grief brings about bad results. All right? I personally experienced that. We had a stillborn child. And as dad in the home, I felt like I had to be the strong person. All right? For the family. And to be the strong person, if I'm all in tears and crying and falling to pieces, what's my children going to do? And I erred on the side of not taking the time to simply cry it out. All right. God gives us tears for a reason. It cleanses the grief out of us. And I should have taken the time to do that because later, a few years later, other issues came into my life. And it affected me emotionally. All right. You can't bottle things up too long, or after a while, it will get to you. So, my point is this, folks, learn to take the time to grieve. God may have brought grief into your life so that you would learn to receive. Learn to receive. If you're a giver, it's very difficult to receive something from somebody else. But if nobody is going to be a receiver, then how can you be a giver? All right? Somebody recently gave me a check. He wanted to bless me. I opened it up, opened the envelope, and wow, 20 grand. Now what am I going to do with that? All right? What do you do with that? Let me say this. Learn to say thank you. All right, learn to say thank you. I'll give you another story about that too. So, there was a brother in the congregation that was a little bit at odds with me, and maybe I was a little odd. I was at odds with him too, we'll be honest about it. And my finances weren't holding out, and I had bills coming due that month, and I was like, wow, how am I going to do this? And I prayed that morning. I remember asking God, Lord, you know where we're at financially, and there's no money here to pay the bills. I went to work. I think it was Tuesday. Tuesday or Wednesday, my wife called me and she said, "Were you expecting a check from Mr. XYZ?" And I said, "No, why?" "I got a check in the mail here for, I don't remember, it was $5,000 or $6,000, $7,000, $8,000. I'm like, "Oh boy, now what am I going to do?" Because I don't like to be bought, all right? So if somebody in your congregation gives you a large sum of money, now all of a sudden your hands are tied, right? Because you kind of got to dance in their tune. But I had a problem. I had a big problem. I prayed and I said, "Lord, you know my need. What are you going to do about it? What can I do? What do you want me to do?" And he sent a check from somebody I didn't want a check from. My wife's like, "What are you going to do?" "I don't know." So I called a brother up and I said, "You know, I'm not sure what to do about this." I said, "I usually will not accept money from somebody I know in the congregation because as a leader, you just don't want to do that. But I have a problem." I said, "I prayed and I said, Lord, I have some needs here and I don't know how I'm going to meet my needs." He said, "You know what, Will?" He said, very interestingly, he said, "I went out Monday," he said, "and I was trying to get some work done." And he said, "I just kept having this, I need to send Will a check. I need to send Will some money." He said, "I went back in the house and told my wife, write Will a check." I said, "Wow." I said, "Well, brother," I said, "all I can say is thank you. All right? Thank you." I had to be willing to receive, okay? Sometimes we have to be willing to receive from others even though we might feel as though that person isn't somebody I want to receive from. I want to tell you, that's part of friendship today, all right? If you truly want to have friends, be willing to receive whatever gift somebody wants to give you. Don't look at the giver and discount the gift. I'll give you another story. We used to attend market down in Harrisonburg, and this lady came through, and it was right in the middle of the city, and she was, I'm going to say, a little simple. And she gave me a Christmas gift. A wrapped up package. Well, it was youth wrapping paper. Wow, okay. And the card was used. It was already had somebody else's name in it. It was scribbled out, and I don't think she knew my name. I'm not sure what. Anyway, it was a used card. It was used wrapping paper. And inside there was this little, what do you call those things you hang on Christmas trees, ornaments or whatever? And it was obviously very used. And I'm like, "Ah, thank you." So the next year, she comes along with a gift. And I told the girls that work for me, I said, "Yours this year." Okay, so what happened? I had already discounted this lady. And this is, I'm telling you this because not because I'm right. It was wrong to do, all right? The second year, so Lucy worked for us. She gave it to Lucy, and Lucy opened it up. Brand new wrapping paper, brand new card, and a brand new pair of salad tongs. I was the loser because I had already decided that this wasn't worth receiving from her. All right? Be careful. God brings people into your life to test you as to what are your values in life. All right? And when you look at that person, don't just throw them in the ditch. That person, God may be wanting to teach you something very, very valuable. All right? Now, I had somebody turn to Psalm 68:6. Who's going to read it here? Sam, do you want to read it loud and clear?
"God setteth the solitary in families. He bringeth out those which are bound in chains. But the rebellious dwell in a dry land."
All right. Anybody know what the solitary is? Alone. Somebody that's all alone. And what's he do with them? Puts them in a family. God's design for society was there would be family units. Family units are for the purpose of learning community. All right? That's why God didn't just have us born into like animals. He put us into family units so that we would learn to interact, communicate with other people. And it starts in the family. Now, obviously, some of you here, maybe not. I've had teenagers over the years, all right? And you get to that age, I don't know how many of you are teenagers. I'm just guessing that most of you are. Get to the age that dad and mom are just a little, they're old and dumb, all right? They are not with the times. They don't got a clue what's going on out here. Matter of fact, they don't know how to run their cell phones. Really, really poor. Remember this. God gave you dad and mom for a purpose. At your age in life, God gave you dad and mom to be the brake on your ambitions and desires in life. All right? And I realize that might seem really restrictive. But what dad and mom are trying to do, or should be trying to do, is say, stop and think about the decision you're making. Just don't go ramming out there and doing it and saying, oh, well, maybe it'll work out. Guess what? It doesn't work out. If I can tell you from 59 years of experience, it doesn't always work out when you go ramming out and doing something. Stop and think. Stop and think. That's why God took the solitary and He put them into families. And He says, I want you to learn how to live as a community in the family. And then you're going to come to the age where you're going to move outside of that family and you're going to create maybe other families and you're going to learn to communicate and relate to one another. And guess what church is all about? It's the coming together of those communities, those little communities, into a bigger community. And we learn to function and relate to one another in that process. God's plan for the human race. God took the solitary and He set them in families. We should find our first friendships inside of the family. All right? I want to tell you now, if you're at odds with dad and mom, I hope this week inspires you, with the other teachers and everybody, to go home and make peace with dad and mom and learn to enjoy family life. If you think that you're going to go out and start a family and your family is going to be different than my family, and we're going to get it down just right, you're going to be disappointed. Because I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. Out of the heart are the what? Issues of life. What does that mean? Somebody, ladies. Issues of life. I hit a tough time in life. Guess what happens? I rely on whatever's in my heart to make that decision. All right? And if I've got garbage in my heart, I'm going to make a garbage decision. All right? Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Very, very important that whatever we're putting in here, the value system that we have in our life, finally is what we will live out of in those times when we have to make that impulsive choice or decision. You're not going to stop and say, oh, let me see. I had this certain ideal in life, and this is what we're going to do, and I'm not going to relive how bad dad and mom were. No. You know what you're going to do? You're going to do the very same thing. Unless you choose to respect dad and mom for who they are and not for what they are. You got that? Learn to respect dad and mom for who they are. I'm going to tell you now, I'm a firm believer that dad and mom is the greatest gift other than Jesus Christ that He has given you and I. And just remember this. I was your age one time too. And I had a great dad and mom. I had a young man tell me that he ran off from home. And I went to visit him and I said, so what's up with all this? I mean, just running off from dad and mom. Well, he says, you have to understand, my parents aren't Christian. Oh, yeah? Really? So that gives me a right to run away from home because dad and mom aren't Christian. Let me tell you something, young man. God knew your dad and mom were not going to be Christian, all right? That was debatable whether they were or not. That was his perspective. God knew that. God chose to put you in that home, even though they were not Christian. God chose to put me in a Christian home with the very best of parents. You know why? Because he knew that I didn't have the fiber in my life to make it otherwise. I said, young man, remember this. God knows you have the fiber to make it with ungodly parents. I want each of you to remember that. If you find yourself in a less than ideal home situation, remember this. God knows that you have the fiber and the strength to make it in that situation. And you might look at those of us who've had perfect situations. Remember this. It's because we were weak, not because we were strong. And sometimes we get that reversed. We get that mixed up. And we start to think that we got the bad end of the deal. You might not have got the bad end of the deal. Because weak people have a lot more work to put into it than what people with a lot of fiber do. So let's remember that. God said, took the solitary instead of a family. I'm not getting too far here. So we all have needs for friends. Let's go to Ecclesiastes chapter 4. What time am I supposed to wrap it up here, Brian? Quarter after? I think he said 45 minutes. 3:10? We've got 2 minutes to go. Okay. 3:30. Okay. Ecclesiastes chapter 4. So we have Solomon looking at life. So my goal for this subject is to give you some principles and then look at Bible illustrations of how this all works out in relation to friends. Remember this, there are individuals in life who find themselves in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 1. Now if I can find Ecclesiastes. So I returned and considered all the oppression that are done under the sun, and behold the tears of such as were oppressed, and they had no comforter, and on the side of their oppressors there was power, but they had no comforter. Pretty lonely position to be in life, right? He looked at that and he says, here's people who are oppressed, and there's no comforters. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 1, where I'm reading from. All right. As believers, I want you to understand that he's not talking about somebody down here in Ephrata or Lancaster City or whatever city you're in. He's talking about individuals that you might go to church with. He's talking about individuals who might be here this week. They feel oppressed and there's no one to comfort them. All right? Verse 8, there is one alone, and there is not a second. He hath neither child nor brother, yet there is no end of all his labor. Neither is I satisfied with riches, neither saith he, for whom do I labor? Bereave my soul of good. This is vanity, yea, it is a sore travail. All right? He goes on to expound on the fact that there are individuals who have nobody in life. Nobody. I have a tenant that finds himself in that situation, as far as I know anyway. Since he doesn't have any family. He sent me the rent check the other year and he had a little note on it. Happy birthday to me, I'm 70. Oh wow, okay. So you are so lonely that you even send yourself a birthday card. Happy birthday to me, I'm 70. There are people like that in this world. They're just all alone, all right? When I worked at Zimmerman Chair, I had a lady call me and she said, I'm ordering myself a table for my birthday gift. What? How do you give yourself a gift? I mean, really, how dumb is that? Why don't you just buy a table rather than say, I'm giving myself a gift? Well, she was telling me a lot by that, in my opinion. She was simply telling me that there was no one else in her life that was going to give her a table, so she had to buy herself a birthday gift. All right? Lonely people in this world. You say, well, that's out there. You might discover that that's in here. You might discover that this week that there's individuals sitting right here who feel that way about life. All right? Here's what I want to inspire each one of you to. Take the initiative to be somebody's friend. All right? Take the initiative to be somebody's friend. Two are better than one because they have good reward for their labor. If they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. All right? That's why you need people in your life. So this Joe fellow that I was talking about, the tenants downstairs called me and she said, Will, she said, we have not seen Joe for the last 3 days. This was 2 or 3 years ago. And it was hot. His air conditioner isn't running. And the windows are all covered up. And we've knocked on the door and nobody answers the door. And we're not sure what's going on. I said, okay, I'll come in. So I go in. I go out and pound on her, Joe, you in there? Nothing. All I could hear was a fan running. So I told the lady on the first floor, I said, well, look, I want you to take a video of this because I don't want to be in trouble breaking and going into somebody's apartment without permission ahead of time. I said, I'm going to unlock the door. I said, so you take a video of me going in, all right? I unlocked the door and guess what? Unlock it and I go, bump. It's hooked on the inside. And I'm thinking, there's no way you can hook the door on this one door into this apartment. So the door's hooked on the inside. There's a fan running. So I holler through the crack of the door, Joe, you in there? Joe! And I'm yelling. Nothing. And I'm thinking, what happened to Joe? So I was trying to decide what the smart thing to do was. So we called the police. I'm like, I'm not going to go in there and find a dead body by myself. So we called the police and they come out. And the first question they asked was, did you smell anything? It's like, no, I didn't smell anything unusual. So they talked to me. Well, yeah, he's the owner. I guess we can just go in. So I flipped the little hook on the inside and I opened the door. Joe, you in here? Yeah, I'm in here. I said, you okay? He's, yeah, I don't have any clothes on. I had my headphones on and I didn't hear you. I said, well, whatever. All right. So my point is this. The poor guy is all alone. All right. Thankfully, the lady downstairs was keeping an eye out for him because people that are all alone can disappear. Goners, you know? All right. That's why be somebody's friend. I don't think anybody's in that condition here today. At least this week you got some people around you. It's a good thing. So the value of friendship is that we don't need to do life by ourselves. All right? Now, I want to go to, I told you earlier that friendships can be messy. We want to look at one of those. Let's go to 2 Samuel. And I'm going to rely on some of your Bible knowledge for this. So, David's best friend was who? Jonathan. Jonathan died, killed in battle, I believe. I get the story right. David became king. Saul also died in battle. David became king. And What was David's request after he became king in relation to his friend Jonathan? Someone?
Take care of his children.
Take care of his children. He sent a request out. Is there any of Jonathan's friends still living? What was the risk involved in that? Someone? He would be killed. In other words, when one king came on the scene, he made sure that anybody that was from the former kingdom was totally annihilated. So there was no competition for the kingdom. All right? So somebody had come along and said, well, there's Mephibosheth. And he's lame. But he is Jonathan's son. And he said, bring him to me. So remember this, that in any relationship, David was reaching out and Mephibosheth had to... Can you imagine the fear that went in his heart? I'm a goner. I'm history. The king has called me into his presence and I'm... What can you guess? You're going to eliminate me. So there's no competition for the kingdom. That had to be going through his thoughts, I would think. But he came in and David told him, I'm going to restore to you your grandfather's land, and I want you to eat at my table. Now, why did David do that? Ladies.
In honor of his friendship with Jonathan.
Honor of his friendship with Jonathan. Let's take that just a little bit deeper than that. That's correct. Can we use the word commitment? All right. Honor and commitment, maybe they're the same thing if you looked in the dictionary. I don't know. But he was committed. I want to say this. Any friendship that is a Christian friendship requires commitment. All right. There's a commitment that you're going to put into this thing. The world's friendships are touch and go. Individuals who have left their Anabaptist background and decided, I'm going to go out here and I'm going to live it up, suddenly discover that people will befriend them as long as they're getting something out of that relationship. But as soon as you quit giving, they'll walk right away from you. You're gone. All right? Had a young man come over to the house sometimes. I don't know if he considered himself a Christian or not. Had Anabaptist heritage. I said, so what do you keep hanging around with us Mennonites for? I mean, he says, I just don't want to break off that connection. Yeah, I get it. Why not? Anybody know?
Loyalty?
Maybe?
Lonely?
Lonely? That's part of it.
Conviction?
I'm going to put it this way. He knows, he learned, having thrown everything away and gone out there and lived in the world, that his true friends aren't out there. His true friends were the people he went to church with when he was a boy. His true friends are the ones that when the times get going tough, he knows that he can come back and they'll at least give him a place to sleep. All right? That's the true friends. I want to remind you all of that. If you ever decide that you're going to just throw it all away and there's better friends out there somewhere, remember this. Your true friends are going to be the people who cared about you when you were that high. Okay? Not when you're the big boy. Not when you think you've got it all together. It's the people who cared about you when you were the little person. Remember that. The part that we have to remember as believers is, do I really care about that person, even though they've thrown it all away? I have a lot of fun with that young man when he comes around. Comes over to the house and we can sit and talk for a long time. I say young man, he's 30 years old now. But he's young. He's young to me. So Jonathan, David was fulfilling a commitment to Jonathan. And he comes across this invalid. All right? Mephibosheth. In my grown-up years, I came from Washington County, Maryland. And we'd have youth singings. We didn't have like what you had up here. So we had 300-400 young people would get together on a Saturday evening in somebody's implement shed. They would move all the equipment out and we got in there and we sang and it was the highlight. It was about the only thing we did as young people. You say, oh, that's pretty dry. Well, it's where we lived. It's what we did. Anyway, there was a young man my age, probably related to me, I think, because I called his mom aunt, so I'm not sure how all that connection was. But he had some limitations. His limitations were to the extent where you couldn't really carry a conversation with him. He liked to talk. Where did fire trucks go? Nice day out. And a sane conversation wasn't going to happen. But my parents said, you will take him along to singing. My other friend said, if you're taking him, I'm not going with you. And he didn't. Now, I knew when Dad said, you will, that's the way it was. There was no question in that. You will take him. The real question came was when he wanted to take me. And it was like, I'm not sure about it. And I don't remember anymore. That's been 50-some years ago. Not quite 50. 40-some years ago. If he drove me a time or so, I think he did. We got there and I'm still here. So it worked out. My point is this. Sometimes, you know, my other friend never in all those years went along with me if I took this young man with me. I'm thankful for a dad and a mom that says, you will. You will. All right? Because it taught me to have compassion for other people. All right? The other young man got away with it. I guess he's compassionate today, too. I don't know. It's not my problem to judge him. So David took on a problem. If you're going to go into friendships, remember those friends might have some issues. Stay away from it. I'm the difference between Christian friendship and non-Christian friendship is what am I willing to give? If this is all about what I'm going to get, you're no different than the man in the world. All right? What can I give? What's this other person? And let's get it. There are individuals who are clingy. There are some people you befriend them, and after a while you feel like they're a leech. And you feel like they're dragging you down. It's like, how do I get rid of this person? I got 5 minutes. I'm going to wrap this up real quick for you. David gets... Absalom comes in and boots Dad out of the kingship, all right? What did Mephibosheth do? Does anybody know? I had to read it myself to come up with that. Changed his loyalty, all right? He stayed behind. Now, Ziba was Mephibosheth's servant. Ziba comes over to David. Ziba meets David as he was fleeing Jerusalem at the top of the hill, and he has a couple donkeys and some food and supplies, and he says, oh, David, here. He said, I want to give you this to help you out. And David says, well, where is your master? And he says, he said, he thinks, and I'm putting this in my own words, he thinks that God is going to restore the kingdom to him. Oh, wow. This man who went out on a limb, spared this young man's life, and now he comes along and says, I'm getting my dad's kingdom back. It's all for me. David goes, he comes back, and to the kingdom after Absalom was disposed of. And Mephibosheth, he meets him and goes, where were you at? What's up with you? And Mephibosheth says, my servant deceived you. Uh-oh, now we got a problem. Who's lying? Who's lying? Was Ziba, the servant, lying? Or was Mephibosheth lying? I want to tell you that sometimes friendships get messy. They get real messy. They get really messy when you get a third person between you and your friend. And the third person says, she said, what she said, blah, blah, blah. And he said, and he said, blah, blah. And after a while, it's like, what? What's going on here, folks? And you want to just take heads and start banging them together, okay? And you start thinking, why did I ever get myself in this mess? Does anybody know what David did? Let's go there. It's 2 Samuel 19. 2 Samuel 19. Verse 27. Well, for time's sake, we're just going to go to verse 29. And the king said unto him, this is to Mephibosheth, why speakest thou any more of thy matters? I have said, thou and Ziba divide the land. And Mephibosheth said unto the king, yea, let him take all, for so much as my lord the king has come again in peace unto his own house. There's something inside of each one of us that wants justice, and we want to know, what's the truth? Here's what I want to point out about David. David walked away from it. He probably had his ideas who was lying and who wasn't. David walked away from it. He didn't dissolve his friendship with Mephibosheth or Ziba. He simply non-issue. One thing the Christian friendship will always be is once a friend, always a friend. What did Jesus tell Judas when he met him in the garden? Friend. What? The man that betrayed Christ and God, and Jesus says, friend? Did Christ die for Judas? Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Christian friendship doesn't need justice. Christian friendship doesn't need to settle the score. We simply take the situation at face value and move on. Once a friend, always a friend. I had a friend, a man, I call him my friend. Somebody told me later, he says, you don't know what he's saying behind your back. You know what? I really don't care what he's saying behind my back. He's my friend, all right? When we can start to develop those kind of friendships, it's going to make a big difference in our churches and in our communities and in our society. Tomorrow, we are going to look at enjoying our differences, all right? Enjoying our differences. There's going to be differences in friendships. How can we enjoy them? God bless you.
Thank you for listening to this message. We trust that it has been a blessing to you. If you would like additional sermons or a catalog, please visit our website at effortofministries.org. Call us toll-free at 855-557-7902 or write to us at Effort of Ministries, 400 West Main Street, Suite 1, Ephrata, Pennsylvania, 17522. You are welcome to copy this message for free distribution. This ministry is supported by your donations. May the Lord Jesus bless you.